Do you want to make your money make sense? Listen to Business Sense every Monday to Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and make sense of your money.
Now, virtual reality is becoming a powerful tool for personalized learning. Virtual reality simulations that adapt to an individual's pace and style of learning help learners grasp difficult concepts more easily. It is crucial then to approach the integration process with careful planning, ongoing evaluation, and a focus on aligning virtual reality experiences with the curriculum goals and the student needs. And I know that sounds a whole lot more Chinese, but Ronald is here to help us make sense of that. Good evening, Ronald.
Good evening. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. And yourself?
No, I'm good. Apart from the cold weather, I'm good.
Ah, is it cold?
Yeah, it's the beginning of winter, so.
Ah, a change of season and all that. Did you catch on the flu that's doing the rounds as well? Sounds like you are.
No. I'm surviving.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying by all means to have the lemons, the oranges,
yeah.
And yeah, I've survived this far.
Oh, okay.
Grace of God.
Okay, and if you've survived this far, because I do think the bark is really doing the rounds, eh? And seeing quite a lot of people catching on to it. I'm like, stay far from me. They're very, very far. I don't want people with this
very
thing.
Yeah, true.
Because the few that I've seen that caught on to it are complaining that, sure, it's the worst thing. Just second to COVID, it's just becoming worse and worse. I'm like, yo, guys, stay very far, eh?
Yeah, people are getting injected for it. I know someone who actually got a drip.
Mm.
I pray not.
It's bad. Yeah, I also pray not. Mm. We don't want it at all. But thank you so much once again, Ronald. Really appreciate your time. I think the last time we had a conversation was, I think, around March or thereabouts. So it's been quite a bit of a minute between, of course, that time and now. But for people who may not know you, who is Ronald? And just a little bit about what you do.
Okay, so Ronald is a tech enthusiast. I am well vested in education technology.
Mm.
I run an ICT company that deals with tech education, and we are on a mission to provide market aligned skills development and solutions for, and we're trying to nurture the future of Africa's tech talent.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I love that. Love that. That's a massive industry, this education and technology, tech education, as you might call it. Some people might call it like that. But it's a massive, massive industry. I think it's standing as a catalytic industry, especially in the growth of the African continent. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a growing space, especially if we're talking of VR, virtual reality.
Yeah.
It's gaining quite a lot of traction globally.
Mm.
And while it's in the early stages, though, you find several African countries are piloting virtual reality projects to enhance learning.
Yeah.
We take a tour to Kenya.
Mm.
You've got the Google Expeditions project.
Mm.
Which has introduced virtual reality to classrooms. And
this
is allowing students to take virtual trips,
mm-hmm.
virtual field trips,
mm.
to places like the Great Wall of China
or
even International Space Station.
Oh, wow.
So not only is it aiding travel, right, at no cost, removing those geographical barriers, but it's also enhancing distance learning.
Yeah.
Right. It's, you know, in Africa, we have challenges of distances between the homestead and the school, you know. But if we have such features in place, then you know that kids can actually learn. They don't have to travel 10 kilometers every morning and another 10 in the evening to go back home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. And I was about to say, as I was reflecting on this, just also coming to the show, was that we didn't grow up in a space like that. You know, if I just look take a look at a glance at when I grew up. I mean, we didn't have customized learning. You know, we were all thrown into a class, all 60 of you, and you really have to either swim or sink. Between the two, you make a choice. Sometimes thrown into classes that the teacher really didn't care about any customized learning or about our needs, you know, as diverse as they might have been as learners. We're just thrown in there, and like I said, you either sink or swim. And you had to make a decision between the two. It seems like education with the aid of technology is taking a very different, much more pragmatic, personalized and customized view at education. So how would you maybe bring us on board in terms of the current state of virtual reality, particularly in education? And I'm also referencing back to some of the conversations we've had about what virtual reality is. But what's the current state?
Yeah, so it's slowly getting into Africa.
Okay.
All right. And it's got a lot of possibilities in the education space. One of them being, like I mentioned, the taking field trips.
Yeah.
It can also transport students to historical events,
yeah.
Explore the depths of the ocean, simulate scientific experiences. And so you've got different countries like Kenya.
Yeah.
I also know South Africa right now at the University of Joburg and Pretoria. They are currently using virtual reality to teach anatomy, providing medical students with 3D view of the human body, which, you know, enhances their understanding and retention of complex concepts. It also allows for repetition. I mean, imagine if every time you have to kill a cow, you probably teach, you know, a certain topic.
Yeah,
it's not only costly, but I mean the element on the cows themselves. You know, so we are seeing bits and pieces of it becoming rooted in different countries. South Africa, Kenya, I know Rwanda as well. So we are on the right track. We're taking baby steps as a continent.
And some people have argued that we are like, what, a decade or so behind other parts of the world, especially as technology advances even in this education space. And with you saying we are taking steps, is that a fair assessment of about a decade or so behind?
I'm not quite sure if that's accurate, but what I can say is, if not more, to be honest, because I'll give you an example of last week.
Right? Yeah.
Last week we partnered with an institution. Right. We drove 2 hours out of Harare to a place called Beatrice.
Yeah.
And to a school that has 150 students, and 10 kilometers away there's another school with about 400, so, and then another one that is about 300 something. So the one with 150, it has one laptop, right, and one smart screen. The other one with 400 students has about 5 laptops, right, and network coverage there is still a problem. So I wouldn't want to say if we are calculating in terms of years, I really don't know if we can say 10 years is what we have, you know.
Sure.
Because while South Africa is talking virtual reality and Kenya, we are still trying to say to bring access to the actual gadgets.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just one example of what we did. So I went there and did a day's workshop on enhancing ICT education. So that's what we have.
That's really bad. Then I thought 10 years was bad, but it sounds like it's more than 10 years, particularly in other, well, I suppose lagging behind less developed countries in the African continent, the problem seems to be a whole lot more. But for you, as someone who's in this space as well, what brought about these possibilities? You know, is it a push by the change in the world? Or is it like a pull or demand, you know, that type of a thing? Because if you're talking about, you know, getting children into a space where they can do field trips virtually, they can do, you know, things like scientific experiences virtually. It all sounds like actually a great idea. Now that I think about it, if that was done, you know, to me when I was still at school, I probably would have passed certain subjects much better than I did, because I just couldn't comprehend CO2 plus Mg2 makes CH3. What I'm like, where is this thing? So I just couldn't get it. So I'm now thinking, if these things were there during my time, I think perhaps it could have made my learning experience a little bit better, and I would have understood these complex terms and stuff like that. But is it that we are advancing with these possibilities because the world is demanding us to do so, or we are being pulled a certain direction?
Okay, so we are advancing, but I must say, we need to address a few of these challenges.
Mm.
You know, the first step is training and professional development.
Yeah,
right. Like I'm saying, this is something that we have embarked on, and we are welcome to any other partners who want to collaborate on this. On this event, whether it's in Zimbabwe or it's anywhere else in the world, you know. But first step is training and professional development of our teachers and our staff, right? And people who are doing this, like, you find there's an organization called InGenie.
Yeah.
You know, it's an ed tech incubator. It's also in South Africa. South Africa is doing quite well, I won't lie.
Mm.
You know? Yeah, they offer training programs to help teachers integrate VR into their teaching methods, you know. Mm. Another method of reducing that gap would be to start with simple VR applications, you know, before moving to complex ones. You know, there's simple ones that we can actually integrate into our phones, the usual phones that we have. Mm. And I know, even at the school that we went to last week, I think 13 of the 150 students had smartphones. Mm. So, you know, it's at least the smartphone is there. So that's a starting point.
Yeah, that's sure. It's quite deep. It's definitely quite deep. Like, maybe like I was saying earlier, in 10 years is a little bit, you know, not so true. It's a whole lot more than that we are lagging the world behind. And I suspect then conversations like virtual reality become even more deeper. And yes, I know InGenie, quite an interesting incubator, I must say. I think they're doing some amazing stuff there. And I know of a friend of mine that I went to church with while we were still young, who also went into robotics as well. I thought, what an amazing way to just transition from, you know, accounting and all those sort of stuff and really get into the world of this ever-changing technological space and using robotics. And he's also gone into education as well, taking the issue of education and bringing AI and all these things to the townships here in South Africa, and working, I suppose, with the likes of InGenie and all that is something that I thought was really catalytic in a way. And we're moving towards a certain direction. But let's
I must commend, though, like we have recently, the government has recently accepted Starlink to start operating in Zimbabwe.
Look at
that. I think it's like this week or late last week.
Yeah.
So you find, When such moves are made, because those are infrastructural moves, and they also reduce the burden of implementing some of those technological advancements. So you find we move faster if there's buy-in from the higher stakeholders. So I will say, we may actually move faster if this is this the track we are moving on.
Definitely. And I think, look, we literally are the world's next biggest thing. I mean, let's be honest, Africa is, right? And the sad part is that we don't see it, but the rest of the world, you go to the East, they're all coming here. You go to the West, they're all coming here. Europe is coming here. Realize it's just how massive the next big thing is going to come out of Africa. And this technology is one way in which we can also just, you know, I suppose, pivot ourselves and position ourselves for this kind of change that's going to be happening in the world. But you painted a picture there for me with the schools that you went to, that it seems like there's still a learning curve that even teachers and educators must still go through as well to, I suppose, understand and then embrace. I don't know whether it's embracing before understanding, but whatever comes first, there, you know. But there's still a learning curve that educators still need to go through, I suppose, in understanding virtual reality and then adapting to it and then teaching it and then making sure they monitor and get the kids and the learners to fully understand. You are in this space, and I would say you are, I suppose, strategically placed to get our educators on board. But where do we start, basically? That's where I'm trying to go. Where do we start? The training you mentioned, which I'm fully in agreement with. But where else do we go to? Is it a mindset shift thing also that's needed in there? What do we need to just shake up and wake up from this slumber that we are in? Because really, the world is moving.
Okay, so first and foremost, it's... here in Zimbabwe, for example, we have the private sector, private schools,
yeah,
and government schools,
yeah,
right? And then you also have the rural ones. Private schools are fine.
Okay.
Part of the government schools are also fine.
Yeah.
It's just the rural ones that
yeah.
Are really struggling. The ones which are off-grid, you know.
Mm.
And there, that's where we need the mind shift. How do we achieve this?
Mm.
That professional learning and development, you know. Because you'll find, I remember during the previous regime with President Robert Gabriel Mugabe, they donated computers throughout the country.
Yeah.
Right? But... For most of the schools, they locked those computers away because there wasn't a follow up in terms of the professional and the professional development and the learning and how to educate the teacher how to use this, because you realize it is to their advantage in their teaching and delivery of the curriculum to the students. But if they don't know that, then they have no way of, the computer remains a foreign body that they cannot use. So that mind shift can only come through the actual education of the teacher. Maybe probably starting off from their teaching colleges, as they are learning, it becomes mandatory to take advantage of this.
Yeah.
And then when they are now in industry, they are also being taught how to use it. So that's what, with the few resources that we have, we are also trying to engage in that. Yeah.
Sure, that's interesting. You spoke about not knowing there, perhaps. Maybe they don't know the benefits then, I suppose, particularly of virtual reality in the classroom. What would you say as we bring them on board now, so that maybe, again, might cause a bit of a mind shift there, even if it's just a little bit, an ounce of it there. But what are the benefits then? Let's talk to our teachers, educators, maybe who may not know the benefit of this virtual reality. What are the benefits?
Yeah, so benefits of virtual reality in education are significant, right? They can make learning more engaging and interactive.
Okay.
It can cater to different learning styles.
Okay.
Like, for example, you've got a simulation that's already existing.
Yeah.
So when my attention span between 9 to 12 noon and the child who's more active at night, same lesson, but they can then grasp the concept at their most active time, right?
I love it.
So you find when it's class time, right, the teacher focuses on what you call a flipped classroom.
Mm.
What they're coming to class to do is to do the exercises and the just testing their knowledge.
Mm.
But the learning and the research, they have done at home, they have done in their own time. Yeah. And it can also provide experiential learning that textbooks cannot. I mean, I was watching a video of a child who enters the human body through the mouth, right? And they're actually seeing themselves in the canals of the body. Then they get into the lung. Then they get into maybe the alveoli. Mm. You know, it's different from a textbook.
Mm. Because
a textbook is, you know, it's just text and a picture.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'll give you an example of Nigeria, right? In Nigeria, there is the immersive learning lab.
Yeah.
It's an initiative that also uses virtual reality to teach subjects like history, geography, making learning more tangible and memorable for students.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Mm. So there are quite a lot of benefits, but it caters to your learning style.
Yeah.
That's number one.
Mm.
It gives you experiential learning.
Mm.
That's number two. And it can also help you to teach complex subjects like history. I mean, imagine another example of a simulation that allows you to stand in the audience when Martin Luther is presenting his I Have a Dream. You know.
Sure.
So that changes the game for a student, for a history student.
Sure. We would have less people who are actually failing in class and, you know, quote unquote being seen to be stupid, or you know, they are not at the level where they should be grasping. It could be a fact that not that someone is stupid, not that the learner is stupid, but it's that the learning style is different. You know, so
absolutely,
that's number one that I'm so we could bolster our pass rates at school, but more than just bolster our pass rates, we could bolster understanding. Because I think there was this survey that was also done here in South Africa where it showed that a lot of the learners in the primary school, they don't learn for meaning. In other words, they don't understand what they are learning. You know, they are being taught 1 + 1 = 2. They will say 1 + 1 = 2, but they don't understand what does that mean.
What did it mean?
Exactly,
yeah.
You know, which talks to that learning style. So I see that benefit as well. And please correct me, I'm a novice in this space, but that's what I see in my mind, to say we could bolster learning outcomes, you know, more pass rates, but also since it caters to the learning style of the learner, then learners learn for learning and understanding. Because I can imagine if the child is learning about Martin Luther and the speech that he did, which was a groundbreaking, really, really great speech, but if they can see themselves standing next to a Martin Luther saying that, I mean, that thing will never leave their memory, especially because kids, you know, students, young ones are able to visualize these things. And if they can visualize them, they can understand them much better.
Actually, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. Sure.
You'll find, so, I mean, there are some students who really, I don't know if it's the dyslexic ones who struggle to read and write.
Mm.
But that group of students which struggle to read, and like they can't construct a full sentence when they're writing.
Yeah.
But their speech is normal. But they are more practical. Like you'll find those are the students that do quite well with the coding subjects, the practical ones, you know.
Mm.
So with more practical activities, they can also be catered for.
Yeah, that's lovely. That's what I'm saying. I mean, we could really change the face of our students and how they even see themselves, even at a personal level. Because I think you and I maybe experienced this thing growing up at school where you felt like you were stupid. You know, you felt like everyone else is getting higher marks. It's sometimes it's that the teaching learning style is just different. You know, it's not that you are stupid, and we've had to fight those type of things. Imagine. fighting the thought of being called stupid or being perceived as being stupid because you didn't get a certain grade?
You know, sadly, I always say this, we in the years that some of us learned, you know, everyone was judged based on their like if you were a fish, you were judged based on your ability to climb up a tree.
Yeah.
And a cheetah was judged on the ability to swim. You know. Just because there was one method of assessing everyone. Challenges we had.
It's been rough, eh?
just
took me back. It just took me back because, yo, I don't know whether this is now me going into my inner child that was traumatized, but but really just looking at this, I'm like, the Bible was correct. In the last days, knowledge shall increase. And really it is increasing and kind of making things better, I suppose. Now let's then talk as we draw to a close around, what are some of the considerations in your experience then that you think need to be made, I suppose, to align virtual reality with the curriculum and what the curriculum is trying to achieve at the end of the day? This is now for my listeners who are educators and thinking, but how do I align this thing to what I want to achieve? The syllabus says we must achieve 1, 2, 3, 4. How do we strike an alignment there?
Okay. So when integrating VR into the curriculum, it's essential to ensure that these experiences align with educational goals.
Yeah.
And they meet students' needs.
Yeah.
And this involves selecting a virtual reality content that complements the curriculum.
Yeah.
Like I was saying, you know, a child getting into the human body and seeing the alveoli, you know, so the topic will be human body.
Whatever. Yeah.
And they have that. Then you also need to set clear learning objectives, right?
Mm.
And also we need to consider accessibility.
Very important.
Accessibility of virtual reality platforms and equipment. You know, I know in Rwanda there's a company called African Code Week.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a project, but we've also worked with them in Zimbabwe, but in Rwanda they've incorporated virtual reality to teach coding.
Oh, nice!
Digital literacy, and you know they're aligning it to the country's goal of becoming a tech hub.
Sure.
Right. So for educators, it's important to just make sure that you set your clear learning objectives. So for each topic. Right, there is need to then get the relevant learning content to the particular topic. You know, if it's Oxbow Lakes or if it's clouds in geography, then you know you need to download content related to that. Right, then you say, for this topic, let's put on our VR goggles and let's watch this. Let's play around with this. Yeah.
Sure. That would be very nice. Now, governments, then, as we close, a message to them, because I see this thing starting with governments, adoption at a governmental level, and not just adoption for the sake of adoption, but adopting it with intentionality to see it through for the benefit of our kids. I think if you look at most African countries, the amount of money that they spend on education does not yield the same returns in terms of educational outcomes and all that. We need governments to take this, isn't it? At least if they can give it the green light, it should be easy to implement then.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important to ensure access to the technology. And I'm glad, like I was saying, congrats to Zimbabwe for finally accepting Starlink because it sits at the center of everything else. You know, we need to try out pilot programs. We start with pilot programs in selected schools and evaluate effectiveness of of that before scaling up, because you know, sometimes these in different schools, these technologies bring out different outcomes.
Yes, that's true.
I will emphasize on professional training and development.
Sure.
You know, because we need to bring the teacher themselves up to speed with basic technology for starters, you know, before we even get to virtual reality technology. There is also need to develop and align virtual reality content and curriculum, you know, content integration, localized content, you know, changing the style of learning, you know, I mean, there's one example that used to be, that was used by the former minister of Professor Amon Morira. He would always say, we want to teach the child in the raw school that A is for apple, yet they've never seen an apple, right? When we could have used A is for amarula, because amarula is naturally a tree that you find on the outskirts. You know, so if they then if we then localize our content, you know, it's easier for the child to
definitely
learn. Unlike when they're trying to learn the alphabet and what that fruit is.
Sure. It just underscores what Christ was doing also with the parables, using things that people know and can see.
Then also, we could promote research and innovation. You know, research grants, innovation hubs. I know right now in Zimbabwe, I'll speak for Zimbabwe because that's what I know most. Every university now has an innovation hub. So where they're actually promoting, so you'll find that there are companies, anyone who decides to want to create a company and they want, they are allowed to go through the innovation hub. They facilitate the registration and formalization of the company. They are in partnership with the university. They get office space, you know. Now, if people want to also get into VR technology, they get exposure to those. So in a nutshell, we can invest in the infrastructure and accessibility, provide training and professional development, develop and align our content with the curriculum. Then we can promote research and innovation. Yeah, and, you know, maybe encourage public-private partnerships. You know, we collaborate with the industry. Because you'll find companies will use this technology. So government, being the body, can partner with private companies who, which are already using this, you know. Then we, at the end of it, we implement monitoring and evaluation to assess the impact. And we also put in feedback mechanisms that allow us to actually assess and say, is this working for us? What has been the pass rate in the last 4 years compared to the last 2 years that we've implemented virtual reality? You know, I know in Kenya they have digital literacy programs. South Africa as well, they have that as well. So that's probably the advice that we can probably proffer to,
Sure. Thank you so much, man. Thanks, Ronald. Really appreciate your time. Some great insights there. I hope that, you know, people in power are listening and can implement that. But I love what you said. Africa is moving, albeit slow, but we are moving. At least there's movement. Thank you so much for your time, man, and God bless you.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
Have a good evening, too. Bye-bye.
Do you want to make your money make sense? Listen to Business Sense every Monday to Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and make sense of your money.